to take an intro.
Hold that right there. See, now I'm going to show you how to turn into a family event. Hey, how you doing, honey? Honey? I like the blue balls.
Blue balls. Season 9.5.
I like the blue balls.
9.5.
Blue ball spot.
Like the little... Ooh, that was a... I blew it out immediately. Like the little fishies swimming around in Crater Lake in western Oregon. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. It's cold in that lake. My name is Jake Beckhard, and I am your intrepid cohort. And I'm joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid cohort, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how has your off-season been, my friend?
Hey, we're back, baby.
Yo, I can't wait to listen to that 9.5 theme. I bet it slaps.
It will sound awful.
Tell us right. In the comments. Step up. Let us know.
Thus far.
No one has awful, done a power ranking of the themes yet, and I think that
that's because I archive them because we don't want to pay for more storage on our hosting site.
Mm-hmm.
I archive all the old episodes, so who knows?
Is it time to drop a mixtape? Is it time to load up the Blue Balls Bandcamp?
Yeah, but they're not mixtapes if they're all 30 seconds long.
I feel like that's exactly what they are.
We'll see. I have no idea. I tried making 9.5 and I failed before, so I'm going to try to do it after we record, and we'll see what happens. I don't know why I stress so much when we'll only use it for two episodes.
I thought you had accepted that the failure was what was going up. That's how I read those text messages. I assumed, and I think you should.
I kept the failure.
I think you should put that file. Don't work 1 second longer on 9.5. You know, let it live as a historical
it's really
document.
Bad, though. We'll see. Welcome to any new listeners or people who there are plenty who dropped off of listening last year because the team was awful and have decided to come in with a renewed sense of optimism, much like us, and we're happy to be back for the first time in 3 months.
Yeah, that sounds
our longest
right.
break
Good
ever.
Gravy. It feels because it ended pretty early for us. We had a lot of time to put our feet up and watch absolutely nothing happen in the off season until the last possible minute, and now this week. Nothing but headlines, hot stove going crazy, setting off smoke alarms all through the house. And we are going to chat about it quite heavily, I think. But is there any, two new fans, two old fans alike coming back? We're so excited you're here. We can't promise anything's going to be different this season, but we're going to do our best to cover. What should somebody fresh to this podcast know, Trey, so that their expectations are level with the product they're about to receive?
I don't know. Like, listen to any other podcast. You get the drill.
I thought you meant listen to the other podcasts so that you get what you're looking for.
Absolutely don't do that. It's whatever. We are very NYCFC focused, about 85 to 90% of what we talk about.
Except for the first 10 minutes of every episode.
We started as a fun way to hang out and as a joke, and now I have a bunch of media credentials. I don't know how it happened. And we talk very seriously at some points and talk about, like, gross things and bad jokes and some other times. I don't know. It's a good time. Come hang out. Put your feet up.
Yeah, that's right. It's easy. I would call this the number one podcast to put on to keep your dog company at home. We've got a soothing, and then your dog can give you some really salient tactical analysis of a losing team in a second tier league, though generously second tier league.
and what most of our listeners do, put us at 1.25 speed, We're a little more exciting if you do that.
We won't take offense, but you should, but not for the theme. Make sure you catch the theme at the RPM, or at the BPM rather, that it's meant to be listened to. You know, some things have to be kept sacred. Trey, you did an episode. I guess I wouldn't call it an episode because nobody published it, but you did a live show between the last episode we recorded and this one. I wasn't able to because I was flying in that night and pissed about it. But Blue Christmas came back this year.
Blue Christmas was back, and it was a great time. It went probably as well as it could have, frankly.
How do you mean?
Like, because you never, because it's just a bunch of us, like, coming together and, like, well, I hope, you know, the adult, the only adult in the room, Mike Anderer from Blue City Radio, can pull it together. And, you know, he comes with his million cords and cables and he sets it up and it's great. And he brings little helpers that gave out snacks and set up a raffle. And, you know, at times I had to be kind of the director and, like, okay, next segment now. Which is fine, but because, like, we haven't done that in years, so, like, you know, there's a natural flow that it can settle into that's can be boring. But it was great in terms of the amount of people that came and the amount of people that watched online and the amount of people who, the podcasters that came. I'm not going to list them all now because we got too much to talk about, but they were all great. Shout out to all the Podluminati that showed up, except for you. And everyone still thinks that you're don't exist.
I don't exist. This is an AI program Trey wrote before ChatGPT had the market cornered. And I may sound realistic, and it's because I don't know everything about what I should be talking about. But that's because Trey wrote me, and he doesn't know anything either. So it's a sort of, I come by my lack of knowledge naturally, but I am an AI, and I have devoured all of soccer Twitter. It's just living in
plenty
my
of
robot brain.
Blue balls, just jumping on that slowly dying bit on the end, like stamping out ashes of a campfire. shout out to the fans of this podcast that came. There's two guys, it's been so long I forget everyone's name,
nice.
Two guys that like bought me a few White Claws, appreciate that. Justin, remember his name because he had our sweater on, shout out to Justin. And you know, we got the merch, we'll plug it at the end of the pod, and you know, you can always support there. But I'm excited, you know what, 3 months off, like, I don't know if you feel the same way, really my like anger and disappointment and frankly depression really it was enough time to kind of smooth all that over, like where I'm like finally jonesing for another season with maybe a slight bit of optimism or at least a renewed sense of realism, right? Like fully understand, I talked to you about like watching Chelsea, how like if you just reframe your mind as to what you're watching, it can be much more enjoyable. I think I've reset my expectations, and again, that you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, et cetera, et cetera. Do you feel the same?
Absolutely. The heart, the hope springs eternal in this sport and in this league. And yeah, no, I'm really glad to be back in the hot seat. I've been excited about it. I've been scheduling all of our rec sessions. I'm most of the way through it. It's taken me a lot. It's taken more work than I expected it to. But it's coming together and it starts to seem like a season, which like, yeah, I'm excited to see. It just can't be that much worse than what it was last year. And now that we're making some signings happen and we're making some extensions happen, we're starting to see what the next philosophy might look like. I'll admit, and I hope that, or I'm sure that there are people on the other side of this podcast who agree with me, that the one thing that makes it a little bit harder to carry the faith for is that we've got the same guy in charge, right? This is going to be another Nick Cushing season, and it really remains to be seen how much that means anything is going to change meaningfully on the pitch, even as the personnel shifts over. But we'll get into what expectations are and what your much more savvy read on the situation and on the roster is right now. Shall we get into it, boss?
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk to me. Okay, now when we were prepping for this, you included somebody on here who technically isn't who we can't really call an extension, but of all the extensions that have been announced, including this man, Perea, YBKG about it, who are you most excited about? Who do you feel like is going to have the most profound effect on this next era of the team?
Well, I'm going to zag because you so easily set me up for a great transition and answer saying Perea, but I'm gonna zag just to make it more fun for myself. I'm gonna say Matt Freese. That was probably the most unexpected extension that we had, frankly.
Speak on that.
I think it's clear with, you know, he played 10 games, and in the last 8 games, and I think this is kind of that Hope Springs Eternal kind of thing that we were talking about. Obviously, there's a bad taste in your mouth with the finish of the season, but what's most important in these off seasons is to build on what's good, get rid of what's bad, and change things for the better. And Matt Freese in his last 10 games just really solidified, you know, had his opportunity and he took it. And we finished the season 4 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss. We didn't make the playoffs. We didn't win or the games we needed to, but we at least put out a much better showing than the rest of the season. I think that has a lot to do with playing Bakker up front and Talas getting his spot back on the left wing and introducing Julian Fernandez more and et cetera, et cetera. But that's the second et cetera I've done so far. Wow. Here we go, baby.
You've just got so much. We have to imagine all of the things you could be saying. You're just trying not to run on at the mouth, and we appreciate it. We appreciate you yada yada-ing your talking points.
So I'm excited that they've decided to make a commitment. You know, look, I was firmly in the camp of Barraza at the beginning of the season. His underlying numbers looked very good, especially for a young goalkeeper that had not started in this league before. But at the end of the day, you know, later on in the season, those numbers ended up taking a downturn. And the numbers went down for everyone in the season and for every player on the roster. But I think just a pretty obvious decline in performance left the opportunity for Matt Freese to make his mark. And I think, you know, it's a decision they didn't have to make. And I think it's a clear intention. It's like saying, you know, we believe in this guy based on what we've seen. This is a team that was out of the playoffs last year. They need to start making risk, start taking risk, and start declaring intentions and declaring what this, because the clear story of last year was not getting shit together until the last minute. And now that's kind of the story of this offseason too, but this, it's more bigger picture is figuring out things before the season starts.
Yeah. Having, and this bit, not to interrupt, but like, I don't remember what the stat was that I saw on Twitter, but something like 11 out of 19 signings, or something, or probably a larger number of those signings, in NYCFC preseason history that happened in January happened after January 15th or something, or like on or after January 15th. The point is, late signings have always been a little bit a part of this club's signing strategy. They don't get out of things or get out in front of things early in the preseason, and I think that's because they are operating on a global level with global level negotiators. It has, everything comes back to CFG, right? And it doesn't, I think the lateness in this case doesn't say much about the quality that we're getting. It's more important that we're getting, if we are getting people now, sure, it's good news. Sure. If we're getting people mid-season, less so maybe.
Sure, in terms of like setting the table for the season to come.
Let me pull back to Freese for a second. I have a question.
Yes.
Before we jump off in other directions, which is for those folks who maybe tuned into the first 8 matches or 10, 12 matches even, and so mostly got Barraza last year. What do you think is going to be definitional about Matt Freese's style of goalkeeping? What's it like to watch him between the sticks?
I think what's most important is the just the broad range of shot stopping he has, and that he can do it in quieter moments of a game. I look more towards our final few games, Miami notwithstanding, but there was just long lulls of play and moments where he could have lost focus, and he would rebound to make just some fantastic athletic saves, real good reaction saves. And I think both of our keepers are capable of that, but Freese really put that on a platter where you don't necessarily have to worry on really those more difficult shots out of nowhere, not necessarily a counterattack or set pieces, but just these, you know, these moments where, you know, MLS teams, especially the ones we were playing, can be desperate, and they can, some of the players can unleash, and players can be a little more undisciplined, and they can unleash these shots from farther away or from unexpected angles. And I was really impressed at his ability to make those real difficult reaction saves. You know, and frankly, I look at the numbers. I love looking at numbers. And in terms of post shot expected goal plus minus, which is a long way of saying like of shots on goal, expected goals, how well was he at keeping the ball out when the analytics say he should have? He was not only positive, but he was in the top third of the league for any keepers the whole season who played at least 10 games. And that's what you want, right? If you can get a top third keeper to do that in that amount of time, that's impressive. Now, the big question for Freeze is, can you do it for 20 games? I've been diving into goalkeeper numbers this offseason league-wide over the past few years, and one of the clearest indicators of performance is consistency within a season. The longer a player, the better goalkeepers just play in net longer. And I think it's twofold. Both, they don't get benched, but also the consistency clearly is an advantage. And for him to have those numbers at 10 games, well, if he can stretch it to 15 to 20, that means, you know, we're golden for the whole season. And I think I'm guessing the front office felt the same way, that in that 10 games was enough for them. 10 games is enough for me to say, like, yeah, lock this guy down. I think it is a swing, but I think it's a good swing to take, and so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, it seems
cool guy, like it. Too. Nice guy.
He seems chill. He seems like a great guy. I think you're right that of course will be the determining factor, and I think it's a point well taken that the position is one that is not about your that though the highlights are your fantastic successes in the middle of crazy against crazy odds, the position's really made up of its mistakes, right, or lack thereof. It's about consistency in shots that stopping shots you should stop, I think, has a much profounder impact on the season than the stopping shots that you shouldn't stop. That's just the shit that is the coolest to watch. Can we zig now? Can we zig you back?
Yeah, zig me back.
Tell me about why Perea is why we're so thrilled that this dude we got on loan from Philly is now properly a first-team player for NYCFC.
Well, firstly, the best thing about the deal is that it works for everyone. This is a player that was not in Philadelphia's plans. Kind of weird that they signed him for so much allocation money when they seemingly didn't have a plan for him. He just doesn't fit their style of play. He doesn't fit their formations. He was kind of the odd man out in their midfield. We took him on mid-season as a short-term loan, and it worked out perfectly. It was, it's just going away from the analytics. It's a simple eye test. The team really fed off of his passion and his motor and his engine and his positivity. He was clearly kind of the most fit player in a lot of the games he played, and it was desperately something this team needed. Just someone in the midfield that could speed up our play both offensively and defensively, cover so much ground, can play two ways really well, and is for all it roster intents and purposes an American, and also in our hearts, this is a melting pot baby, and he was born here. But I don't know where that was going.
No, it's good. It's not xenophobic at all.
I don't know, some people are weird. And most importantly, he wanted to play here. He liked New York. He wanted to play here. He didn't want to go back to Philly.
Because he was getting minutes. I like playing places where I play too.
That's also true.
Like, I don't think he was the Big Apple. Gosh, I already have my Katz's order down. No, he just likes playing. You would too.
You know what? I didn't really factor that part in, but that's a great point. You know what was maybe a little surprising was how long the negotiations went on. You know, the team had been talking to Philly since Philly left the playoffs unceremoniously. And so it was like 2 months of back and forth between Philly and NYCFC in terms of settling on the right number. That number ended up being $300,000 in allocation money this year, $350,000 next year, and or vice versa, don't remember, and $200,000 as goalposts or whatever, losing the word, of possible additional money, which is, I think, fine for us. We have plenty to play with. We got 500K GAM for missing the playoffs last year, so we had some funny money to throw around. And Philly doesn't have to, you know, have him on their books anymore. It's a win for everyone. And
do you think, just from the perspective of NYCFC, is he overvalued or undervalued at that price? I mean, I know it's funny money, so it's like a little different, obviously, right? Like,
it's undervalued. It's undervalued. We at least have some like relative measuring sticks. I think Paul Harvey pointed to Kellen Acosta, who 2 years ago went to LAFC for over $1 million in GAM, and I personally think that Perea at this point is a better player, if not marginally, then at least by one factor. So I think it's worth it. I think you factor in just kind of how he transformed the team mentally, and how his play really motivated a lot of other players. I think the fact that he speaks multiple languages and can really fit into the locker room really well, I think it's just a great signing for us. What do you think? You liked him, right? I can't remember.
Of course I liked him. Yeah.
I can't remember last year.
No, me neither, honest to God. But in as much as it was possible to pay any attention, I liked him. He was a spark plug. I think that's – it was a consistent the even, like, inside of games, right? Games where he subbed in or subbed out, it'd get, like, the style of play or the agility or the sense of trust or creativity. It was directly affected. I think this is somebody who matches our style of play and matches an MLS style of play in a really, a way with it which is both familiar and exciting. Yeah, I'm psyched. This is it's a super, super good move. I thought we'd let him slip through our fingers, and I'm thrilled that we didn't. It's solid, solid work from the front office as far as I'm concerned. Someone I have less of an opinion about, but I know a lot of people out here have an opinion about, is Kevin O'Toole, in part because of his Cinderella story to major minutes. And I wonder how you're feeling about that extension.
I think it was, if anything, necessary. I really kind of forgot to preface this whole discussion with, I think extensions are always good. I think, and especially in MLS, like, you never
always,
you don't want to be a, well, not always, you don't want to be a front office that has to constantly deal with players and their agents wondering what's going to happen next. You know, well, we might touch on Keaton Parks, you know, because that was a big question for him last year. And you don't want players, especially in either positions of need, like goalkeeper, or positions of where the team has a lack of depth, if anything, profound lack of depth, like we do at that left back spot. I think it was super important to lock down Kevin O'Toole to an extension. If anything, because he is clearly a player that Nick Cushing likes. He is a player that competes for spots. He seems to show up the most when the lights are the brightest, like at the end of seasons. He has won his spot twice. He seemingly outcompeted a La Liga player that we were paying a lot of money to get that spot at the end of last year. And I think that speaks a lot to his character. I think it speaks a lot to his versatility as a player. Obviously, I think it's pretty easy to stereotype American players coming out of college as kind of high-floor, low-ceiling players in this league. Like, he's not going to be a star. He's not going to be the big-ticket name that people are going to come to the stadium for. That's the stereotype, and I think it applies to him. It's what I'm saying. However, locking down, you know, him to an extension when we just desperately needed bodies in that spot, and with Brian Kufre leaving the team, I just think it was a smart move. Now, we don't know. The other thing about extensions is I do think they're always a good move until you find out how much money the player's making. I don't presume we're going to be blowing out the bank for Kevin O'Toole. I just think that he's probably at a reasonable salary that we can deal with. So I'm not going to panic. I think that whatever we're paying him is worth having a capable player who has now played multiple MLS seasons and knows the staff, knows the players. Like, the biggest problem with this team at some is like youth and the flitteriness, the lack of stability, the fact that we have people coming and going all the time these days now, and we need to build back that core. Like, what was Reyna's big accomplishment at this club? From a very interesting, to say the least, time with NYCFC, Claudio Reyna, former GM, his sporting director, should we say, is his best move was when he had that summer of locking down Tinnerholm, Ring, Callens, and Sean Johnson. Like, those extensions are one of the biggest reasons why we won MLS Cup. You know, I think that making sure you can lock down players that know the club, know the values of the team, etc. I think it's a good move. That's just my personal opinion. Again, another positive locker room influence, a guy who can get along with many players, that's important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's people who have the vote of confidence, particularly in the doldrums. I think if I'm sympathetic to any argument that like extensions are always good, it's probably that, right? Like, assuming that an extension also means that there's an intangible value along with the tangible, and that like creating that stability and not having to build locker room dynamics or trust or, you know, camaraderie. Is always, it saves you time and energy. God knows. Who else is there to talk about? Listen, I think it's his birthday, but we could talk about Andres Jason.
Wait, why?
Well, because it's his birthday.
No, I like the guy, but we're not even half an hour into the season. We're already reaching. You mean?
Yeah, no, you're right.
I think you mean your buddy. Your buddy. I don't know why I'm saying that.
Yeah, he is my buddy.
Alex. Alex Rando.
Yeah, that's right. Alex Rando. Well, we can switch to the youngins now.
That's his first name, right?
Yeah, Alexander Rando, son of noted theater director John Rando, director of. Such hits as
You're in Town. Come on, man. Even
You're
I know
in Town,
that.
But no, I was trying to pull the opera.
Back
Jerry
to the
Springer.
Future?
Jerry Springer the opera.
Oh.
Yeah, also Back to the Future. And you know, former ensemble mate of Dwight Schrute, who gave him props on Twitter. I wasn't gonna make that switch, but we can definitely do that switch and
well,
talk
that's
about
it
homegrown
for extensions,
players, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that it for extensions?
Those are all the announced. Yes, 100%. I have a note about Park's discussion, but I'm not, we don't have to get into any of it.
We can wait. That can wait till next one.
I tend to agree. Yeah. What do you think of these homegrown signings? There's another one that I've done absolutely no research on. Zidane Yanez, who we didn't even talk about prepping for, but is on, you know, you see him on the scroll.
Yeah, let's have a blanket agreement. I don't know if you're with me on this. Any homegrown signing under the age of 17, we're just going to let it fly. Just,
yeah.
Whatever. Just has nothing to do with us.
I think that's probably
right. We're not interested.
Right.
There's other places you can read about these things and talk about them. It's
back
not
at the,
be this
there
podcast.
Aren't really, but we're still not going to do it. We're still not, it's still not our beat. We back in the day, you know, we'd cover every scrap. And now we're a lot older and lazier, so we're not going to get into it.
That's the real nut of it.
I do think, but the reason that you're bringing up Alex Rando, I think besides just the fact that he works in an industry that we hold near and dear, or his father works in an industry we hold near and dear, is that it's interesting to see a prospect goalkeeper signed to the first team when we've just spent a lot of time talking about how it's a little bit of an overdeveloped position in our roster right now.
Well, certainly the signing of Alex Rando leads to a lot more questions than answers. We'll get to that in a second. But firstly, you know, I think the most notable thing about Rando signing is, like, as you mentioned, like the goalkeeper aspect of of a homegrown player, not something we've had before. Rando's kind of been it when it comes to NYCFC goalkeeper prospects over the past few years. The only other prospect is a prospect that is pretty much, and this is no slight to Rando, but Yagodayev, or Yags, as I like to call him. Yagodayev is our real star goalkeeper prospect that we have, who's been, he was invited to the preseason camp last year and maybe the year before, I'm not sure, but last year. He's very young. I think he's only 17, maybe. He might still be 16, I'm not sure. I think he's 17 now. Who is really like the one of the shining star prospects that we have on our two team. But Rando's been really like the mainstay. He's really, what I like about this homegrown signing is that Rando's been here forever. He was one of the OG NYCFC youth prospects, along with the Gio Reynas and the Scallies and the James Sands. He's been here for the whole time. He did leave to go to college, and then he went to, he played a season at Las Vegas Lights in USL. So he left the roost, you know, he left the roost, the nest to, the you know, roost. find some, you know, to test the waters outside. But, you know, I noticed him. He was with the twos last year, got the lion's share of the minutes at goalkeeper last year with the twos, as well as Yagodayev. But I noticed him in the last month or two at home games. I started seeing him kind of sometimes, like, youth players will come and, you know, in civilian clothes, so to speak, and you know, be around the locker room and stuff. So I noticed his influence a little bit more towards the end of the season, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I think a lot of it is, you know, his friends getting a lot more involvement with the team, like Benalcazar and Owusu and things like that. Those guys are gone, but he has a connection to a lot of the players who have bounced back and forth, like a Siegel or some of the other players we've had on the team as well. So I think it's a nice kind of, I don't want to say reward because it sounds like it's a handout. I think he's worked really hard to get to where he is now. I just think he's kind of just another additional, he's a body we can have in camp that, again, familiar with the team, familiar with the facilities, with the coaches, with everything. Just an NYCFC guy, born and bred, and that's just someone you want to keep around. The questions that remain are, you're not going to have four goalkeepers into the season. That means either he's going to spend all of his time with the twos, and I doubt that's happening since we signed him, you know, to the first team, or one of Luis Barraza or Cody Mizell are going to have to go. And that is remains to be seen if that happens.
Do you think, I mean, it would seem obvious that, like, given that Cody Mizell played no minutes in the first team last year, that he'd be the guy to go. Is there any possibility that, like, now that Barraza appears to have lost the battle for first, that it's more likely that we'll trade him away to somebody who maybe sees more potential in him for more money?
I would think that we spent so many years with Barraza and Mizell and Sean Johnson, you know, 2.5 to 3 seasons with those three guys. Like, do we want to stick with number one young guy, old guy? And so we keep Mizell as the old hand kind of guiding the ship behind the scenes or whatever, like the guy who knows how to be a backup. And we let Barraza find greener pastures and get his opportunity elsewhere? Or do you want to continue that motivation between Barraza and Matt Fries? Because if Matt Fries goes down with an injury, you're left with, you know, a 38-year-old Mizell, however old he is, who hasn't played a game in 2 years, or a Rando who doesn't have any professional experience outside of Las Vegas Lights. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think it's a little unpredictable right now. We're in that closed box moment. It's exciting to see where it's gonna turn out. And similarly unpredictable, Trey, I'm fucking full of segues today. Oh my God. Is what's going to happen with signings and how they're going to affect the team, but we're going to try to do our best anyways. Let's chat about the marquee ones, and at least to begin with, about the one that is confirmed. Hannes Wolf is coming on over. Hannes Wolf of Austria, as you thoughtfully corrected me when we were texting about it earlier. This is a get. It's a big get. It's a big swing. It's a big rehab project. Tell us about why. What does this tell you about the conversations the front office is having about how a team might be shaped this year?
Well, NYCFC is not afraid of rehab projects. We had Chris Gloucester. We had Gideon Zalalem. We had Richie Ledesma last year. We had Matias Pellegrini. Like, this team is not afraid of finding value of players that were, you know, at a high pedigree earlier in their career and perhaps have lost their way for one reason or another. And along that line, it makes sense. The difference with Hannes Wolf is that he's 24, a little bit older. In NYCFC years, he's fucking ancient. He also was a higher pedigree than any of those players. This is a guy who went to Mönchengladbach. Oh my God, I was like so confident I'd say it correctly. Mönchengladbach.
I was like, for... the first time I read it, I was like, there's no fucking way.
We're not even gonna try it, but that's God
bless
you.
I call them Borussia. Okay. That's what everyone knows what you're talking about if you say that. he was bought by them for 10 million euros. 10 million. That's not nothing. He was kind of the gem of the Austrian program in terms of attacking players. And he went through our enemies at Salzburg. Then he went to Leipzig. And then he went to Borussia. And his buy clause was triggered by them. And the problem is with him... is that he had some success kind of at lower levels and development times, and on his loan stints he did okay. He was sent to, I think, Swansea for a very brief loan. But the problem is that he was never really fully developed as a player, a majority of which was due to just the most inopportune injuries, just at the worst times. But more recently, he was getting injured and then started this season with Borussia. They were, you know, a new season, new opportunity. He was healthy, was not getting picked by the coach, most likely because he was never fully integrated with the team beforehand. And then a month into the season, he tore his meniscus in October. So that was that. And I think they just, in exchange for a Ceylon fee that they gave, that they, added to the transaction with us, they were just, you know, they wanted to give him enough. They just sunk cost, you know, they just wanted to do right by the player and give him a new opportunity. And for him, it is absolutely a new opportunity. We're paying him more than probably another European team would. He's going to get opportunities to play and reinvigorate that value that he was once so highly coveted at. It is exciting because he is a player that was at a very high pedigree. He is a very skinny, shifty, kind of attacking player. It's hard to really pin down what kind of a player he is because he hasn't fomented a certain position or style of play, but it's pretty clear. They used him mostly in a more creative attacking role, kind of inside. He's left-footed. He played left wing, but also centrally as a midfielder. He works really well in combination for a player of his age, or of his experience. He seems to have a real knack for working in very tight spaces and working in combination and can swing a ball in if he needs to. I think for him, it's really going to be those first few games where we see he's going to need to get fit. the coaching staff is very slow in integrating players unless they feel like they're fully fit. We know that from experience, so I want to see how we decide to use him. I think the most interesting read on this is, if we don't sign another left back, do we see him play as a left wing back, kind of in that Brian Kufre role, mm-hmm. where he will spend more of his time attacking, and we stick with Tavon Gray on the right side, who will spend more of his time defending, as a faux three at the back kind of system? I would love to see that because of how much attacking talent we already have on the books or are getting. So that would be interesting. He does seem very flexible because he has a skill set. He has a very high defensive work rate as well. He's a very he's a player that is not afraid to get into challenges as well. So I'm very excited to see how he plays out. The only risks are, is he a jack of all trades, master of none, or is he actually super injury plagued and we'll never see him, much like Richie Ledesma proved to be last year as well. So I have higher hopes and expectations because of just where he came from previously and what was previously thought of him, but it remains to be seen, as all these things are, you know, in the preseason.
Yeah, and on the whole, I wouldn't say that we're a team that when we get these rebuild players, that we regret them because of injury or like injury proneness, right? Like this, it's more often that it just doesn't pan out the way that any high ceiling prospect might or might not. It's not generally like, oh, we just sunk a bunch of money on somebody who simply has too many health problems or recurring health problems or complications to play. You know, I think there's been a pretty sensible approach to ensuring that nobody's getting pushed into positions that are going to put them at high risk for not being worth the transfer fee or what have you. And I feel similarly optimistic here. You know, this seems sensible. It seems well-paced, or at least like it could be. It's not like we're taking somebody who's high risk and making them the linchpin of our attack, mm-hmm. necessarily, mm-hmm. right? Like, nothing about this is like, okay, we're putting all of our chips on black here. It's it feels like part of a suite that is being developed. And I think that read on like, oh, is it a left back? You know, is it a full on fix it job where we're gonna take you to an entirely different place than where you've been used to, but use all of your same skills? That feels like part of that, right? That's a build from the ground. That's safer in some ways because you get someone who knows that they are in some ways coming in as a novice, but with like a few advantages, and it's going to be like, you know, like developing conservatively but consistently. I think it's exciting. Shall we talk about...
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
No, yep. I just said yep.
Yep. Yep, great. Shall we stay in Europe for now and talk about Johan... Mijatovic.
There it is.
With the Y on the J?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Let's talk about him. Let's talk about... Oh, and I did it wrong anyways. It's Jovan, not Johan. Fucking fool. Serbian striker. 9 goals in 19 appearances. I'm just reading the headlines, Trey. Is this the solution to all of our striking woes?
No, not at all.
Then why'd we get him?
No.
Or why are we getting him? Why is he likely to come? And how likely is it that he's going to come?
He is going to come as a, if he does, seems pretty set in stone that he will, but we'll see. He is going to be a function of City Football Group. He is coming here through rule manipulation, etc. So he plays for Red Star Belgrade right now. You know, a pretty storied team in Europe, a high level team. And he is the young star of Serbian football. He is a super talented, super young 18-year-old attacking talent, a real dog on the pitch, real bulldog. Really just a monster in the box, real savage, super talented. I see him. So really what's happened is he got signed from one team to Red Star, but he already played games with his first team this technically this season. So he's now played for two teams in Europe this season, which means Man City, who want him for the future, either as part of their loan army or even, you know, we'll see. He's 18, so you don't know. He's very good now. He can't play for another team in Europe this season due to FIFA rules or whatever. But he could play in little old America. So that would be a great tool. And what is very likely to happen is that Man City sign him, which is, they're looking at 10 million euro transfer fee for him. They can sign him. Yeah, that's a lot for an 18-year-old from Serbia. They can sign him, send him on over to us, let us play with him for a little bit, compete with Bakrar, you know, work him in, get a feel, and then ship him right back out to Man City, either in the summer or in the winter. Now, it would suck if it was the summer, that because we'd only get 6 months with him. You know, that's kind of just how it goes when you're part of CFG. You reap the benefits of having kind of this young star prospect, but you also might lose him super quickly too. The equivalent I had in my head is just similar to like Angelino.
Right.
You know, who came super young, was super talented, was clearly rough, like a diamond in the rough, but you really saw the talent he had. Just needed more experience, and played really well here. And then we sent him on his way, and he's had a super successful European career, beloved by all the teams he's played for. He went bald. I don't know if you knew that about Angelino.
I did not.
He went bald very quickly, like when he was like 23, and he's stuck with it, and it's cool. Or even younger than 23, I'm not sure. I see it in that mold. Like, essentially, we've seen NYCFC linked to a lot of... they know. Like, I know we criticize this team a lot, and frankly, they deserve a lot of it, but they know. Like, they knew we were still missing something at striker. Like, you can't just have Bakrar slowly worked in at the end of a season and be like, okay, we're good. Like, you need to have something. And they've been trying to get multiple young striking talents to compete with Bakrar. Unfortunately, like, you don't get you. It's not like you're shopping at the store. You don't make a list of what you want and you get it. Most teams don't get any of the players they want, especially if you're in America. Like, players just frankly don't necessarily want to come here. So you have to make do with what you have. And one of those things is benefiting from a relationship with a mothership. And that seems to be how we're fixing this problem, at least in the short term. I think if he does come, and it seems like he will, we'll have a nice, fun little competition for the first 6 months of the season with Bakrar. Hopefully get him some goals. I'm sure Man City won't want us running him into the ground or getting him hurt. And then that buys us time to find another prospect that we can have at striker, or Gabe Siegel turns on another motherfucking Gabriel Siegelman turns on another level and takes that fucking spot. You know, one of the two. So that's that's how I personally see this Mijatovic signing potentially going. Regardless, when you have a player, again, we talk pedigree, that level of pedigree, like, you take him. I don't care if it's 6 days, 6 months, 6 years. Like, put him on the team. I'm happy.
This is me. I'm going to do an impression of a pundit who is saying something that people want to hear, which is he's staying. He's staying the whole year. I am pretending that I'm sure that it's to Man City's best interests for him to stay the whole year. And yes, lead the offense this season, which is, I think, what everybody wants. We don't want to go into this season being like, well, we'll see what the fuck happens. Bakrar is not, I mean, I don't know. Bakrar is not going to save us. Bakrar is not going to be an S-tier goal scorer in MLS this season.
Are you sure?
I could be wrong. And I saw a lot of
his underlying numbers are fantastic.
We'll see. Maybe second half of the season, it all comes through and becomes repeatable, which I think is his biggest challenge right now. I'm not sure that signing this guy is actually helpful in that way, because to a certain extent, I think if you look at strikers, past a certain level with those underlying numbers, especially, which maybe, if I'm to take you seriously, Bakrar has achieved, I think consistency maybe is more valuable than competition. Because it's part of a, right, like it's about goal stopping energy and goal scoring energy are the same thing. It's confidence. Yep. You know what I mean? So I don't know that it's better for Bakrar to have this guy. And so at the end of the day, if we have this guy, let's have this guy and be a playoff team. You know, let's have this guy and blow it up and let him ride in the backseat for a little while longer, unless like something crazy happens. But certainly Gabe Siegel's also not going to be Tati Castellanos. You know, it's just not going to. It's not the way that it
says
goes.
You, bitch.
It feels like the best chance for a high scoring team this year is just to hold on to our Serbian friend for as long as possible, and then he gets a bunch of more value. And so if he enters the loan tank, they can make a lot of money off of him. Or it takes them that long to know that he's first team material at Man City.
I'll just bounce right off of that idea you were floating for a second and say, at least, at the very least, we'll be in a better position than 2022 at the striker position, where we lost Tati Castellanos and just didn't have a plan for when he left, and we put Talish up there and whatever, and no one was prepared. So we went into the playoffs of 2022, and we're just woefully not ready to face other teams, even though we made the Easter Conference Final. We certainly had no shot of winning that game nor the final. No matter what David Lee says about, we were the better team for the first 40 minutes. Yeah, sure. Okay. sorry, David Lee. Don't be mad at me. But with this, let's say Mijatovic comes and fucking lights the world on fire and then he leaves halfway through the season, well, at least you'll have a real striker who has experience scoring goals in MLS to be here as the you know, parachute going into the playoffs. Like I think at least, like I don't know. Bakrar, I get what you're saying about consistency, but Bakrar feels like the kind of player that might really benefit from competition, because he does seem like a fucking killer. Like he does seem like he might strangle someone. Like just seeing him fight with Santi for penalty kicks last year, as much as I hated it, it does at least show someone who is willing to fight for a spot. And I think that will only benefit. And also, we can't go into the season with one striker, so I'll take two.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. All right, let's close up the transfer rumors by talking about Agustin Ojeda.
Ojeda. We're in a different continent now.
Ojeda. You're right. How can I possibly keep track? It can't be my job as a member of the press to get people's names right. Reports in Argentina suggest we are finalizing a deal to pull in Ojeda from Racing Club de Avellaneda. Nope, that's not even fucking close. From Racing.
You don't even have to say it. Racing, yeah.
Take me through whether this changes our offense in some meaningful way, whether having a promising winger changes changes how we're even talking about these strikers that we're talking about, and if you want to segue towards the end into a little speculation station, what it says in terms of how this team is looking at Talish Magno's futures for the 24th season.
So, I think this one is super interesting. On its face, I love it. He's also young. Do you have his age pulled up?
Yeah, he's 19, according to this.
19. I think he's just 19, too. Or no, maybe mid last year or something. Young, super young. On its face, I like it. Why? Well, I love the Julian Fernandez signing, and this is very similar. You got a super young winger who had earned first team playing time at a team in Argentina that is very well known for its development of players. And that's what we did with Julian, and that's what Agustin is as well. So on its face, I like it for that reason. You always want more. This is a team that loves fucking playing on the wing, and you always want more wing talent. I like what I've been seeing. I've been doing a deep dive. You know, sometimes I get really too into the obsessive about kind of the stories and the where everyone comes from and stuff. So I think it's really interesting where he was the gem of their academy outside of someone else that's familiar, which is Toto Aviles, who I also love as a prospect, who is the new center back du jour of Inter Miami. That was his teammate down there. He got his first chance with the first team last in 2022, got one start, and then was sent back to the academy or the reserve team for 15 months. Came back with his first start back after 15 months and fucking tore the fucking lit the world on fire. He was so Gago, Fernando Gago, who is, I think Fernando's his first name. I should hope so. I watched him when I was a child at Boca Juniors, and he was kind of a Boca successful story going to Madrid. He's a fantastic coach. He's now at Chivas. He was Gago's first player he brought up from the reserve team, and then he brought him up again 15 months later. And there was this big story about, like, there was a lot of articles written. It's one of the first things you see when you Google Agustin Ojeda is – he had a fantastic performance, and then he does a press conference with Gago, you know, South American legend, who apparently there was some error, is the word they used. He's basically, oh God, I don't know why I can't word this well. It's like, because it's so cloak and dagger. Essentially, he got a start in 2022 and then was sent back down for a reason. Apparently some kind of digression, some sort of team broke the rule somehow. He was either, no one knows. I have no idea. I'm asking people. He was either mean to a coach or did something bad. He could have even just broke curfew by 5 minutes. I have no idea. But there was a big, like, Gago got in a fight with a reporter because the reporter was like, so what happened? Like, you didn't. And Gago's like, you don't ask him that. He made amends. He made one mistake, and now he's back with the team, and he's doing well. And, like, it was a big story down there. Anyways, I like that because if you have someone like Gago who's won Champions Leagues, he's a fantastic coach, was a fantastic player, backing this guy like he's his own son, giving him opportunity after opportunity, making sure he learns from his mistakes. This is a player that has learned from his mistakes or mistake. I have no idea what happened and came back and has been fucking awesome for the last few months of last year. That is a fantastic. That's the kind of character I want to bring on this team. Mm-hmm. They're young players. We have young players on this team, and the good thing you can say about the young players, outside of the fact that we're a super young team, they don't know how to win, they don't care when they lose, whatever, is that they're good people. And I like bringing in someone that can make a mistake publicly and learn from it, and that their coach has their back about it. And, like, we're going to be spending a lot of money on this kid, but he deserves it. This is a very talented winger in the ilk of Julian Fernandez. Super talented one-on-one attacking, super shifty, super quick, downhill speed, tenacity for days. That's the one thing he has that Julian does not have. It's like this level. I think Julian is much saucier than him and has much more of a goal threat. But I think Ojeda is just much more tenacious, just willing to defend at the front line. Something NYCFC coaches have always loved, and I like that a lot. They call him Trapito. Trapito means literally little cloth. And in Argentina specifically, it's the nickname you give to the guys who do the parking hustle at, like, events and games. You know, like, oh, don't park in the stadium, it's too expensive. And they wave a little cloth to, like, direct cars and stuff. That's why they get the nickname. Trapito, but he's called Trapito because he, until last year, he was only 5'4", and he got a 3-inch growth spurt, but he was so tiny and so skinny, and he's still super skinny. He needs to put some meat on those bones, but most interestingly is that he was a teammate for the last few months of none other than, or for a few months, of none other than, of course, Maxi Morales, who was down there chilling at racing for Rossing, whatever, for, you know, last season, of course. So I'm sure NYCFC, you know, I don't know if Maxi maybe whispered a little something in NYCFC's ear, but I, of course, like this signing. I love my saucy, lanky wingers from Argentina. Like, I fucking love it. I'll love if he comes. I think he'll take some time to develop and like be cohesive into a style and a system. I think that's not in his game yet, but you know, learning how to play with other players in a repeated sense. But I think his story is really interesting. I think what he can bring to this team is really interesting. We'll see what happens, but to transition,
okay, answer that question.
What does it mean for Talis Magno? Because multiple reports coming out in Brazilian and Italian media, both, by the way, that mutual interest between his team and Bologna, owned by MLS's very own Joey Saputo, and coached by a Brazilian, talk about European legends, Thiago Motta. Little interesting whispers happening. I know I went on Twitter and I poo-pooed all the rumors, but then you see this Ojeda signing and it makes me go, maybe. Maybe. What do you think? If you see a team sign Julian Fernandez last summer, I believe we signed him, and then 6 months later goes, we're going to spend another $7.5 million on Julian Fernandez, but right-footed. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, it, you know, it's, I feel like the most obvious part of it is just that Talis Magno, there's no way you can call him a bad player, but he has not worked out for the team. Not really. I think they've just really struggled to figure out how to slot him in. I think the fact that Cushing's sticking around is kind of like, plus this news also to me, like, sounds the death knell for this relationship, because I think Cushing's like the sort of front line of not being able to figure out how to make a great player productive in this case, and saying like, let's not fucking have this tug of war anymore. It's exhausting. It occupies way too much time and energy and experiment in terms of how this team is played. And he's high value and he's going to do very well somewhere else. And he's not interested in being there either. I think enough people don't want him around. And I think that he himself, like, is looking for, like, his narrative about himself, it requires him to leave this team where he has underperformed but still made a name for himself, right? Like, the best thing that can, I buy it 100% that he's looking for other options, and I think that there's a silent or maybe explicit behind closed doors endorsement of that understanding of, like, listen, we love you and we want the best for you, let's Godspeed. Do your thing. They're prepared, and it's not. It doesn't come as a surprise, and it frankly shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us who watched the like constant discourse and constant shifting in what, you know. He's on the bench. He's on the wing. He's striker. He's right. Like, it's just too much. They never settled. We had a whole season to settle it. It never settled. Be done with it. And I think that I think it all signs point to everybody agrees.
You're right, there are certain things that you absolutely nailed on the head there, and that is that Talis has been very clear since the moment he signed for this team that he does not want to be here, that he wants to play in Europe. Like, mm-hmm. That is clear. It is absolutely clear. It is clear to me that there is a Brazilian coach in Europe that wants him. It is clear to me that Talis Magno's agents want him to take this deal. and want, well, I'm sure it's not about him taking the deal. They will take it for him, that they are absolutely willing to do this deal. The question remains with Tyler Magno is, do NYCFC sell at a loss? And that's what I don't know. Because you said it hasn't worked out and he's a bad player. I say he was one of the best wing players in this league in 2022. The numbers are there. You can't ignore it. He was. They fucked up his development royally when they wanted to make him a nine and when they had no backup plan in case it didn't work out. That's their mistake. They fucked up. They took this high value player, this player who can do things in MLS that no one else can do, this player that on his best days and his best moments is better than almost every other player in this league, and they biffed it. They fucked it. There is a complete possibility that they realize that they keep him at his right position, surround him with good players, because we know that's when he was at his best in 2022, when he played with Tati Castellanos, and that they try to elevate his value this season so that they can sell at a profit. Maybe it's mid-season they sell him, perhaps. The question is whether or not they sell at a loss now. Because let me tell you, I'm married to an Italian, and I know firsthand, Italian teams will not overpay for a player. They won't. They will not. They are not interested in overpaying for anyone. So, we know from the Tati Castellanos transfer saga that this team will not sell a player at cost. They want money back. I think with that, they'll keep Talish. The wrinkle is spending so much money on Ojeda. It's like, now you're putting a lot. CFG is going to be looking at NYCFC and going, we've given you a lot of money, baby. Like, that's a lot of money to spend on the same position twice in 3 years and not get anything back for it. So do they want to sell off?
And yet they kept Cushing there. And so like, how are you going to, like, that just seems, you can absolutely audit that choice. But at the end of the day, it seems like you might be responsible for part of it. You know what I mean? Like,
I think you're right. I think you're right. If Nick Cushing, it'll be a big tell about how much influence Nick Cushing has or his opinions, right? This is a player that was benched by Nick Cushing. Like, you nailed it. Like, he was benched. Someone this talented was benched. Like, that means the coach, like, clearly doesn't have him in his plans to one extent or another. And, like, if that's the case, then if Cushing has any say in this club and we're spending 7.5 on a player in the same position, yeah, I don't know. But the player we're getting is also very young and is not ready to take the reins necessarily. I guess we'll find out. But it's just – we just don't know. I just know that all the all the rumors that are out there are from his team. They're from Talis Magno. Like, I don't want people to misconstrue this whole transfer saga as some kind of, something's imminent, something's close. Bologna and NYCFC are working on an agreement. None of that is happening. Bologna have submitted an offer to NYCFC for the player. The player is very willing to go to Bologna. But it's a three-way dance in any soccer transfer. The player has to agree, and both teams have to agree. And there's no indication thus far that NYCFC has agreed to anything. However, NYCFC, as MLS.com likes to put it, MLSsoccer.com, of course, NYCFC is a black box. So we'll never know how willing they are to sell Talis Magno until the day it's done, whether it's in the next 2 weeks, whether it's halfway through the season, or whether it's in 2 years. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say. It's hard to use this Ojeda signing, potential signing, as any indication of what's going to happen, because we don't know.
No, sure. Yeah, it's still very indeterminate. But that's the fun of silly season, Trey. That's the fun of 9.5. Before we log off, give me 2 minutes on what still needs to get fixed at NYCFC. What do you want to see that will make you feel like there's a cohesive strategy heading into the 2024 season?
Center back. We don't got them. We got two. We don't got And this whole fucking idea that we played with last year of like, look, I'm happy that when Justin Hack and Tavon Gray played center back, that it kind of worked out, even though we did lose a lot of games. Like, they at least played heroically and up at a par level for positions they were not playing previously. But that is not how you should be going into a season if your goal is making the playoffs or winning the cup. And this team needs center backs. They don't have them, and they need them. We put in a bid 2 months ago for a player, Lombard Delova, who is from Kosovo, who was super exciting, and I would have loved to have him, but it feels like 2 months is a long time, dude. It sounds like they haven't picked up the phone and called us back. So, ooh, I dropped my phone. We're good. sounds like he's not coming. I mean, it's just quiet there, so I would love to see anyone else, any center back in the world, to come join this team. We kicked off Owusu, who played that position. Are we really going to roll with Tavon Gray? Sounds like Justin Hack might be leaving. That's not something we're going to dive into now. Just a little teaser for y'all. But he might be on the way out. We'll see. So I don't know what the plan is at center back. If we can maybe play Hannes Wolf at left back, cool. We don't know if that's the plan. Would love to have press conferences when we sign players, but that's not a thing that happens. So we don't know. And if that's the case, we need another left back. Outside of that, if we do in fact get Mijatovic, then cool. Then I'm pretty much set everywhere else. To be honest, this team was not missing frontline starters going into this offseason, which is crazy for a team that's didn't make the playoffs. But because we made all our signings at the end of the year, we actually ended up going into the offseason with a majority of our starters intact, which is cool and nice. It felt like the world wasn't necessarily crumbling. But this team is desperate for depth. We're filling it very slowly. But
and it's still untested, Trey. That's I just find that.
Oh, of course.
Like, right? No, like, but there's so much optimism.
But this team is never going to sign a veteran with experience. This team is only going to sign 18-year-olds that they can sell for higher plans later.
I guess so. It's not the way that the
team
started.
No, but you're right. You asked for what this team needs. It needs older players. It does. It doesn't have them. Mm-hmm. The team is the youngest it's ever been. It's still young, and it sucks. Like, they need older players, and they need center backs. That's it. Give me one more older player, one more center back, and we can go into the season at least with a semblance of a full team that can play for extended months of time. And that's an A for me, but we need a fucking center back.
Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. Blue Balls Pod. Y'all know what it is. You can get merch at the link in the bio. Listen, it's getting bad out there on X. Maybe we should be looking at some other platforms, but for now, this is where we live. And if you have any other recommendations, you let us know. If you like what we do, let us know. So give us a review. Throw us a review in iTunes. It's always helpful. Keep on spreading the good word, because we love to keep on doing it. We're going to get one more episode in for you in the preseason, and then we'll jump into season 10. We're so excited to be there. We hope you'll be there too. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Deuces.
Season 9.5. We could bring him the postscript just to say we forgot to talk about the draft picks. We'll do it next time.
No, I didn't forget. I was like, whatever. But yeah, no, for sure. We'll bring him back in. They're not doing anything in the meantime. I'll tell you that much.
Yep. All closed doors. Who knows what the fuck's happening?
Bye.